Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge, I'm Rafanov. Tonight, we catch up with old friend and longtime Southern Kings of War player Dylan Scribner. He shares with us his hopes for Clash of Kings and whether or not those hopes were met after having a chance to flip through the new book. Finally, Matt catches up with Australian legend Paul Collins to gather his first impressions of Clash of Kings 2025. So sit back and enjoy. We are with Dylan Scribner. We got to start off with this. Where the hell have you been for the last, 3 years?
Yeah, just, life has just been kind of beating me down.
All right, well, let's talk about Clash of Kings. Have you been checking out Fanatics? Have you been poking and probing and trying to see, read the tea leaves and figure out what's going on? And, what have you heard? What are your expectations for Clash of Kings 2025?
So the first thing is really just as far as watching Fanatics and the Facebook groups and everything, it's just so funny every year just reading about how the skies fall in, the game's ruined. We were bringing in all these new mechanics and, Kings of War is going to lose what it is. What about Kings of War that makes Kings of War? But really, you have to really sift through the weeds to get down to the nougaty center of what is actually worth reading. It's been really interesting seeing, I guess we have more information now than we did, but when it first dropped, there was a lot of talk about, is it going to interplay with the unlock system? What access is everyone going to have? I know that's something you've been big on, is making sure that there are not some command rich armies and command poor armies. Like, they all need to be pretty, it needs to flow kind of between each army pretty smoothly. So yeah, I'm command dice is the biggest thing I'm excited to check out.
Did you play Vanguard, or have you played Firefight? Have you played any of the Mantic games that use command dice?
I have not. I know that the dice are a little different, but I have played Dead Zone. But they have benefits that you gain off of those. I don't even remember if they were called command dice. It was the dice that had the Mantic symbols and everything on them.
Yeah, I mean, the Dead Zone's the same thing in the sense that you roll dice, you get special abilities. But the dice in Dead Zone actually give you the abilities, right? Because the actual order, if you will, is on the dice. So if you get an extra shooting attack or you get an extra movement, that kind of thing. Whereas Vanguard and Firefight, you roll a resource pool, and then you spend the resources to pay for orders.
Yeah, that's super interesting, and I think that that's definitely a more eloquent way to do it. Whereas, with the Dead Zone style command dice, everyone has the same exact access to the same exact things, like you said, because the orders and abilities are, you're spending the dice facings to gain that specific order, whereas from my understanding, you're spending your pool of points that you roll each turn on specific orders, and some of those are going to have army specific flavors and things like that.
So that's command dice. What about army specific changes? What are you expecting to see on that end?
Well, my main faction is Salamanders, so I'm always excited to look and see, what little tweaks the lizards get. I didn't play at all last year. So I'm just now getting in, practice games with the new Fireborn Life Leech interaction. And that's been kind of fun. One thing I've noticed on that is the things that they gave Inferno to are kind of limited. And I know an RC member said that they were trying to get more of those specific things on the table, but with my specific playstyle, it was kind of hard to get units in that I wanted to play with that also utilized the Clash of Kings update at all. But that's been interesting, and I've been enjoying it, and I'm, you know, I'm painting a new army, and that's been great. And then just updates across the board, seeing what's going up, what's coming down. You know, I know, you know, I've already been listening to some podcasts. You know, there's some sad boys out there about Twilight Kin, but you know, it is what it is.
In terms of other armies, you know, what are you hearing? I mean, you mentioned Salamanders, your main squeeze. You're obviously interested to see, you know, what those changes are. And you mentioned Twilight Kin, but is there any other armies you're excited to see how they're changed?
Planning an ogre project, and I'm planning a, I guess you could call it a human project. I'd like to play, I've been looking at Order of the Brother Mark. So however that manifests, those are the kind of the factions I'm looking at the most. I can't forget about Abyssals. You know, those new models coming out, new units, faction updates. You know, I'm going to be really hard-pressed not to buy some more models next year and add another army to my shelves.
So we talked about command dice. We talked about army-specific changes. What are you thinking about just generic Clash of Kings changes? Because, you know, there's always like a rule tweak. You know, is there anything that you're hoping for or you've heard about?
So a big thing I would be hoping for, it's not likely to happen in a Clash of Kings update, and it's been talked about on Countercharge recently. The unlocking system is a good example of something that works, but it not for the intended purpose. I think there's a lot of things that are allowed to happen inherently within the current unlocking system that are less desirable. If you change it for one thing, it's going to, you know, hit other. I mean, and that's, you know, that's why it needs to be looked at. And I'm sure it's a fourth edition problem, but that would be the hope, that there's the groundworks are at least there in some way. Seeing how the command, how unlocking a bigger command dice pool, that's going to be cool to see. And then as far as core rules, like little tweaks here and there, I would like to see some kind of update with withdrawal. You know, I'm probably a minority situation, but I actually didn't think that there was much wrong with the old bounce back 1 inch. The only issue with that rule was that you were allowed to force your opponent to bounce back. You know, if you ran an individual up as a backstop, I kind of felt like the only change that rule needed was to say you move back up to an inch. If you can't give the full inch for the counter charge, then you don't. If you do the backstopper, no one backs up an inch, but you're taking tactical options away from yourself as well. That would kind of disincentivize that. But I'm sure that there's a plan in the works for that. And just like, you know, new spells, new magic items. I like to see the little tweaks to the magic items over the years have been interesting to check out. Adding spells, anytime flavor is added is a great enhancement to the game, in my opinion.
You know, you also play Sylvankin. Are there other armies that you have played in the past that you're curious to see my unit that I like go up in cost? Did it lose piercing? Or like, was there any other units within armies that you currently play that you're interested to see how they evolve?
I do like Sylvankin a lot. If Sylvankin doesn't get another unlocking unit, I would be kind of sad. They really need another unlocking. My first pick would be Stormwind Cav. I don't know, the greater air that might have been a little heavy-handed. I'm not sure on that. I do know that they basically fell off the face of the planet when they nerfed the greater air elemental, so overtuned a little bit. It did a lot of heavy lifting for that list in particular. I'm not sure what the answer is. Maybe they should have only lost one attack instead of two, but yeah, I mean, the main thing for that army is the unlock. Let's see, I have Sylvankin, Salamanders. It's been so long since I've actually been able to play.
Lines, right, didn't you?
You know, they just got that new update. I haven't played with any of the changes, obviously, because I haven't played in so long. But, I mean, really the only thing for them that I can think of off the top of my head is a Cavern Dweller, maybe a few too many points. But they really don't need anything. I mean, they're such a good faction. I'm not really sure. As far as what I have experience with, that would be what I'd be looking for is some type of added flexibility to Sylvankin, just something new and interesting for the Salamanders. Maybe something to give a more boost to Fireborn Inferno interaction there.
Let's talk scenarios. Every year in Clash of Kings, there's typically going to be some new scenarios. You know, what are you looking for? Do you think that the existing batch of 14 scenarios are sufficient? Do you think some of them should be retired? You know, if new ones are being added, what are you looking for?
The first thing is kill should be dropped from the, it shouldn't be a scenario. Kill is just playing all the rules of the game. It's like, who killed more at the end of the game? That's just like basic, put units down on the table and practice Kings of War. So it's not really a scenario to begin with. And then use that book space for a unique scoring scenario to really add more flavor and flexibility to the scenario play options. You know, 14 scenarios is a good amount of scenarios, but it's really not 14 scenarios though, is it? Because, you know, there's some scenarios that are so much better than other scenarios. Only, you know, 8, 9, maybe 10 scenarios that you even see. Not even that, really. I mean, it could be closer to 6 or 7 scenarios. I mean, you could go to 3 tournaments and, you know, play the same scenario all 3 tournaments. And I think, you know, the biggest offenders are, you know, your dominates, your invades, push. As I say that, again, I haven't played in so long. I haven't been to a tournament in nearly 2 years. Is that still something you see? Like, is it still, you know, 6, 7, 8 scenarios that you see at every event?
Well, I mean, one of the things you're bringing up is that, like, bluff token scenarios. We don't typically see those very much at tournaments just because there's a random element to it. You know, obviously, we don't play kill very much, right? But then there's a couple other scenarios where a lot of people don't like them in a competitive environment, like Salt the Earth, where you can destroy all the tokens, or maybe raise because, you know, you've got to get across the table and blow up tokens. And so there are certain, as you mentioned, there are certain ones that are favorites. Like, for example, you know, why would you play loot if you can play stockpile? Loot is, I mean, it's an original scenario, but stockpile is just so much better. You still have the 3 areas for the tokens, but now you've got a pile of 3 and then 2 piles of 2. Dan Wright, who's the UK Clash of Kings champion, said, in loot, the enemy can run up, get the token, and run away. But if you do that in stockpile, you're getting 3 tokens. So you sort of have to get up there and hold them because you can only take 1 token a turn. Right. I agree with you. You know, even though we have 14 scenarios, we're not using 14 scenarios. When you look at the 14 that we do have, is there a type of scenario that we're missing?
That's a good question. I've never really thought of the scenarios in that way. There are movement-based scenarios. There are zone control scenarios. And then there are loot or token carrying scenarios. In a game where the game is won and lost in the movement phase, I don't know if there is, if there's an element of scoring that we don't already have. Is there something that you have thought of?
The prevalent thing is obviously progressive scoring, because all of our scenarios right now, for the most part, score at the end of the game. There's somewhere you destroy a token. Once you destroy it, that's when you collect the points. But most of them, you're scoring at the end. And I know in Texas, they've got some progressive scoring. North Carolina has some progressive, you know, so where you have to consider scoring at multiple times in the game, as opposed to just have to end of 6 or 7.
I could definitely see progressive scoring coming in to certain scenarios, not progressive scoring across the board, but having certain scenarios that are more progressive. And stockpile is a good example of, it has a little bit of that progressive scoring flavor in there, in the sense that you do have to hold the spot so you can gain the tokens turn after turn.
Yeah, stockpile is kind of like, there's a sense of urgency, right? You still are not going to score till the end of the game, but if you delay getting to the middle, you're going to be behind the eight ball quicker.
That would be an example that blends the two, scoring at the end of the game with the progressiveness of gathering the objectives throughout the game. But just a like a raw progressive scoring, I think we need a couple of scenarios that have that element in them. And then it's not just all scoring at the end of the game. And that would add some dynamism to Kings of War that we haven't really had yet.
You've traveled a lot. Have you seen a progressive scoring scenario that you liked?
I've only experienced it in Texas at Lone Wolf. Mark Cox does a pretty good job with it. You know, we do have someone from Texas on the RC, so that experience is something that the current RC has access to. It'll be really interesting to see what they do with it in the future.
All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to give Dylan a copy of the book, and we're going to let him go through it, and then we'll come back. You know, he can maybe share, did the book meet his expectations, and you know, what was he most surprised about, and we'll go from there. Back with Dylan. He has had a chance to peruse Clash of Kings 2025. We're going to start the generic Clash of Kings changes. That's the area that kind of maybe changes up some of the special rules. Obviously, in this one, you're going to get command dice. So, what'd you think about it?
So, as far as generic changes, I said that something around the withdrawal mechanic should change. Nothing with withdrawal changed, but wavered flank was a point of contention for a lot of people, where you could potentially get wavered and not be able to turn to face the unit that had wavered you. Now with this role, to my understanding, we will be able to do that. I'm so excited about the command dice. It turns out the sky's not falling. It's not going to be cheap to build a command dice pool. Less effect on the game than a lot of people think, but the orders, the generic orders, are super, super interesting. There's a couple little tidbits in there that may add to a damage roll or may add to hit roll. The good ones, the ones that tell you this is what Kings of War is about, are the movement-based orders. You know, you hear it said time and time again, this game is like chess, and it really is. It's won and lost in the movement phase, and so I think adding that flexibility for everyone to have those options, it adds a level of tactical depth in the sense that you see what your opponents, how many points they have left for the turn. Making those decisions, like after combats and stuff like that, it's going to be, I can't wait. It's exciting. The first movement order is called Tactical Retreat. It costs 3 points. So keep in mind that, you know, everyone gets one of each color, right? And then to build anything beyond that, you have to spend points. To buy each dice is a considerable cost, as much as any magic item. When you're issuing a back order, the unit may instead use its full speed. The unit may not use a range attack or be targeted by the surge spell after. So there's your bit of balancing. So that can be used in a variety of ways. Units that are still affected by nimble, considering that you can move through your own units, you know, it's going to be really interesting. It'll be like a flying unit backing up 10 inches to get out of the way. It's just, I can't wait. Reposition. Instead of a back order, it's a sidestep order. So you're talking about an infantry, you know, an infantry horde can slide 5 inches out of the way instead of 2.5 or 3 or 6-3, whatever the case may be. I mean, you're talking about a lot of tactical flexibility with what is at its core a very simple game mechanic. Yes, it is another resource to keep track of, but I would be hard pressed to agree with anyone that says that this is complicated. That's one thing people fear, is added complexity for the sake of complexity. This is not that. For, you know, core changes, this is a very smooth year for Clash of Kings. The Arcane Library, with every limited spell is now unique. That's going to balance out a lot of those really powerful limited spells. But those are the things that really has stood out to me.
Dylan has had a chance to look at the book. We've already chatted about his thoughts on, you know, the overall rules for changes, right? But now you've went through the factions. So I'm just going to turn it over to you.
First thing, I had a couple predictions that I guessed right. The Greater Air Elemental is getting one attack back. You know, they kind of, their usage dropped quite a bit this last, from what I've been seeing anyway, this last year or so. So they're going up to 9 attacks. So that's great. You know, this year, this book is not about necessarily a lot of buffs. It's not really about that. You know, that's really indicative of, like, where the game's at. The game seems to really be in a pretty solid place. This book is really focusing in on the command dice and facilitating the faction orders and the generic orders that those command dice allow you to use. The orders for the command dice are super cool. We already talked about the movement orders and how great that it's going to be for the game, you know, adding tactical depth. But the faction orders are super interesting. Super hyped for the Salamander's faction orders. I can give a unit Fireball 8 for a turn. You know, one thing Salamanders like to do is force the opponent into the battle line. I want to give you bad charges into my battle line. Randomly adding 8 shots into an already pretty solid mid-range, short-range shooting game is going to be pretty cool to kind of see how that. Moving a horde of infantry up and then blasting something with 8 fireball, that sounds fun to me. And then their second order is really what I'm excited for. One of the things that I previously mentioned was the lack of flexibility with Inferno. And so now we will be able to, for a small amount of points, give a unit Inferno for the turn. And so that's going to add a lot of flexibility. It would work just like the Clan Lord on Fire Drake. Right now, the Clan Lord on Fire Drake is the only unit that has Inferno and Fireborn. Off the top of my memory, I'm pretty sure he's the only one. So your Clan Lord on Fire Drake basically reads Life Leech 1, but it still supports its other units. So you can give that, to my understanding, you can give the center of your battle line Inferno. And it's going to give itself Life Leech 1 as well as anything within 6 with Fireborn. It's going to really add options. And not only on the game board, but it's going to add options in list building. Because if you want to play with Fireborn and Inferno right now, are basically limited to Elementals and Fire Drakes. So that's going to add a lot of flexibility to the gameplay as well as list building. That's what I'm super excited for. And as far as the changes to Salamanders and Sylvankin that I already mentioned with the air elementals, the cavalry unlocking, I mentioned that previously. They needed another unlock. My first guess was the Stormwind cavalry. They are now unlocking. They had a couple tweaks to the nimble upgrade, so that's going to be super interesting to take a look at. But other than that, the new Abyssal faction is looking super, super tasty. The Nagari, I know it's already been talked about on the podcast, but the regen 4 aura for units that already have regen, pair that with the Sacrificial Imp. The Sacrificial Imp now gives defense 6 against shooting for a turn. I love seeing things like this, and this is one thing why this gets me excited is I'm not even like really big on like the whole demon thing. But seeing armies get things in the game where that adds tactical counterplay and flavor, something I've been wanting for a long time in King's War is the Fulcon special rule. I don't see any reason why medium and heavy infantry units don't at least have a purchasable upgrade for even just Fulcon 1. You know, because shooting has been running roughshod in Kings of War for a long, long time. They hampered it at the beginning of third
but it's been back for a while. And instead of having to buff this, nerf this constantly, options like that add, smooth things out. Because, you know, for one, you're spending points on it, so not everybody's going to be able to have quote-unquote Fulcon on everything anyway. Infantry's weak, or weaker, so to speak. You know, that's a big thing people want in 4th edition, is to make infantry more viable. I think that's one of the ways you do it. And the Sacrificial M is basically that role. You use it, you get defense 6 for the turn against shooting attacks to the front. It's more akin to Big Shield in the front, but just along those lines of counterplays don't necessarily work in every situation. Like we said, it's for shooting. So if you move up and you pop your Sacrificial M and then your opponent charges you, then the M doesn't come into effect. I'm just super excited. I mean, there's not a lot of overarching changes in this year's Clash of Kings, but the things that were changed really makes me excited for what their plans are for 4th edition. Between the command die system, seeing what they're willing to do with army factions as far as refreshing goes. I mean, we saw it with Night Stalkers. We saw it with Northern Alliance, now Abyss, and Trident Realms. They're really willing to get as far to that line as possible, and it's super exciting to see. And I can't wait. I'm so hyped. I'm ready.
Talked about there's not a lot of changes in the book, but there are some changes. Maybe highlight some of the more interesting, let's just say, nerfs. Some of those units, there are some units that were spammed. So what are some of the standout changes?
I mean, one of the last things we looked at was Twilight Kin. We mentioned that earlier. Their casters are losing piercing on their Wicked Miasma. Sylvan Kin got a couple buffs that I mentioned. The air elementals are probably back with 9 attacks. That's very doable. And then with the cavalry now unlocking, that's really solid. But one thing Sylvan Kin had that kind of set them apart from the other elves was their kings were allowed to upgrade to a wanderer and get the bows. So their bows had 7 attacks because the wanderer had 7 attacks. Not only does a bow cost 15 points now, it's not free, but it can no longer be taken with the wanderer. So, but if you take a king, you're elite across the board. So you're shooting it, your 5 shooting attacks are now elite, but you can't be a wanderer and also have a bow. I mean, your war machines are back, baby. From what I noticed, if you cost 100 points or more and you're a war machine, you have unit strength 1. That means good things for dwarf players, for abyssal dwarf players especially, and bad things for everybody else, I guess. Secured objective is out, and unit strength is in. Unit strength is the way. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what that's going to do to list building. Something that's been a common theme throughout Kings of War since I've been playing in 2nd edition is if you take 1 war machine, you take 3. But that's not true. Whether you hit a single attack all game, your war machine has unit strength 1 now. You know, if you cost a certain amount, you sit on a back objective or you know, any objective, a scoring zone or anything, they still got to come and get you to take that objective away from you. That's huge. Going back to the new Abyssals, not only can they give buffs to their regening units through the Abyssal Nagari, but they can also choose a unit, a turn, and re-roll failed regens. A unit taking 10 or 15 wounds, you're looking at dropping that unit down to 4 or 5 wounds with just the regen roll. So that's going to be pretty wild to see. I'm super excited about what's to come.
All right, we're back with Dylan. He's had a chance to look at the scenarios that are in the Clash of Kings book.
I like what I see. You know, that's something that we mentioned prior was new options to the scoring system. And we have some scenarios that are progressive scoring. So that's going to be nice to see. And they seemed very not overly complicated, very elegant. I don't think it's going to be any issues running these at an event. They seem like very reasonable to go right into the pile of what could be ran in an event. A new scenario called Bulldog is like Push, except there's only one token on each side. And progressively, it's turns.
Turn three onwards.
1 point if your token's on your side. It's 2 points if your token's on the other side. The reason why that's interesting is because there's no tiebreaker in the middle like Push. The complaint with Push is the toilet bowl effect. In my mind, that's going to be less prevalent because you need to stop the other player from getting, because they're going to score. They're going to score because they're guaranteed a point because it's a point when they're on their side.
They can stay on their side of the table if they want.
But you need yours on the other side of the table while keeping theirs on their side of the table.
So they could be scoring two.
So there's going to be some element of engagement in the center of the board because you have to outscore your opponent. Rack and Ruin. There are two 12-inch scoring zones on the board, on the center line. And then there's an objective marker in the center. You score one for the zones on 3, 4, and 5. And then 1 point for holding objective marker. Call those center markers like the tiebreaker objective. Because if I control one half of the board and you control the other half of the board the whole game, then it comes down to who controls that center objective.
Right.
Like with Push, you know, the toilet bowl, I'm pushing up here, you're pushing up there. Who gets the center? You're less likely to have that toilet bowl effect, quote unquote, with this scenario because it's also progressive. So you need to engage both zones. You'll have to split your army pretty good ways apart, you know, to be able to attack both of those objectives. But I'm even more excited than I was before. We have new scenarios. I spoke a little too soon earlier. I think I said this is a... there's not a lot of changes in this Clash book, but that was a little misleading. There's not just a super amount of changes with the factions, but between the command dice, the command orders, the new scenarios, implementing progressive scoring, I mean... You know, this is deceptively a pretty big Clash of Kings book if you look at it from that perspective.
My assumption here is that they're thinking about some of this stuff for 4th edition and they want to get it out there in front of everybody.
One thing that's got me really excited is that, I'm coming back to the game after a couple year long hiatus. I didn't really think about it until now. I feel like I'm coming back at the perfect time because I've started painting new armies, starting to build a local scene there where I'm at in Arkansas right when the Clash of Kings book's coming out. The hype in our local chat groups, we got guys that are like excited for the changes coming out. I'm excited for the changes coming. Just getting to look at just like what they're doing with the game. The game is just in such a great place. I can just see the building blocks for 4th edition, and I'm just glad to be back.
So with 4th edition on the horizon, potentially for 2025, what are the changes that are missing from the Clash of Kings book that you would like to see incorporated into 4th edition?
I think the unlocking system needs to be looked at. If you think about it, even going back to the beginning of 2nd edition, you had shooting spam in the beginning of 2nd edition. That was really rough. Allies, that caused a lot of issues. That wasn't really an unlocking problem in and of itself, but when you answered that issue with allies, it affected the unlocking system for the mother faction. They've made these changes, you know, Clash of Kings after Clash of Kings, you know, making units irregular, making them irregular for other factions, but not for their, you know, primary faction. There's just a lot of things. They fixed some of that by saying allies are no good for tournament play. But I think coming up with an elegant solution that will address... I don't really like the word spam because you can repeat some units that have real no bearing on someone's fun. But I don't know who it is or what the solution would be. But there is an idea out there that will solve the problem. And so the main thing for me would be the unlocking system. I don't think unlocking heroes and monsters with core units, I don't think that works for where the game has evolved. That is a great way to explain it, I think. I think that the game has out-evolved the unlocking system of 2nd Edition.
That is a very astute observation from the guy from Arkansas. But I do think that we have, in some ways, grown past, you know, the very simple unlocking system that we've had since 2nd Edition. So a couple theories that we've heard is obviously the one where a character might allow them to unlock. You know, I would like to just see, you know, to maybe curtail the spamming, you know, take as many units as you want, but once you cross 3, everyone after 3 becomes a regular. And to unlock an irregular unit, you just need a solid unit, either a regiment, horde, or legion. And no, the hordes don't unlock 4. They unlock 1 just like a regiment. I mean, I think that's ultimately, you know, what we need to do. I don't know. What are your ideas for unlocking?
I really like the idea with for a character unlock certain units. You kind of inherently have that little bit of flavor where they're like pseudo formations almost. You know, just the example of salamanders, you know, corsairs are irregular. Obviously they wouldn't be anymore, but like maybe, you know, Firebrand, you take Firebrand, that she allows you to take 2 or 3 units of corsairs. I do think there is a solution that could be hammered out with, you know, saying that anything past 3 is irregular, and also getting rid of irregular counting as troops. You know, because you get 2 for a regiment and 4 for a horde. You know, we've seen that with the infamous Scorchwing list. He took all those Scorchwings and only had 2 unlocking units. I think that right there is a perfect example of why the unlocking system doesn't really work anymore. If you can have a 2,300-point list that is making the game not as fun for some people with only 2 unlocking units, there is something wrong with the unlocking system. But I love the game. I don't have a lot of complaints about it. But the unlocking system, I can't really think of... I mean, that's just another example of how great the place of the game is in. Is I really can't think of anything, you know, just cleaning up rules, looking at the unlocking system. I can't think of anything else on the game side. You know, there's a lot of things I'd like to see with 4th from a production side. But as far as the game goes, I think they're really set up for success.
What about the bounce back rule, staying engaged, withdraw, all that? What would be your suggestion for 4th edition to kind of cover that?
That's a hard question to answer because, you know, I'm not a playtester or anything like that. I don't write rules. I feel like the rule from 2nd edition was okay. Like, I never personally saw anything wrong with it. The only thing I saw wrong with it, like I mentioned before, was you could force movement of your opponent's units on your turn. If they had gotten rid of that, I think that would have been maybe not a better solution, but a less complex solution than what we have now with the disengage withdraw. Because, you know, the disengage and withdraw has been in the conversation since day 1 of 3rd edition. You know, what's the difference in between them? You know, they were like you know, a lot of us thought they were the same thing for a long time. And then we've had FAQs and explanations and stuff since, but it's still in discussion. Someone has a better solution than me, but I think separating disengage from withdraw, I don't know if that had the outcome, the intended outcome, but we'll just have to see, you know, what they come up with. I mean, like I said, my opinion is the original one-inch bounce back, to me, would have been perfect without the forced movement. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, your original idea that you mentioned a little while ago was that you just bounce back up to an inch, right? And the argument is, well, that didn't work because people were putting stuff up against the back of that unit. But technically, in the rules, you're not allowed to have two units touching because you need to be able to show that they're not connected. So in my mind, you don't actually have to physically move the unit. What I'm saying is the unit that was in combat, it bounces back a hair of an inch, but it's no longer engaged at that point. And that's fine. That solves the problem. Here's the good news, that we got Alessio Cavator back in the fold working on it. He's going to come up with a really simplistic yet sophisticated solution here. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to what he comes up with, because whatever it is, I want it to be simple. This is my next question. I'm not a fan of optional rules, right? And, you know, I know right now command ice are optional, but withdraw is optional. What are your thoughts on optional rules, and what do you think should be done with withdraw being optional or command ice being an optional in 4th edition?
I'm of a similar mind. I'll say it like this. I'm okay with something being optional if it has a really clean explanation. Like, for example, allies. I'm okay with that rule being optional because they specifically say you shouldn't use them in tournaments. You're doing a narrative event, a one day or whatever, you know, so that way they're able to leave that in the game for flavor purposes, but just let TOs know the allies are not balanced for competitive play. Withdraw is the example of an optional rule that I'm not okay with. Just because it does leave the door open for any given tournament to say yes or no, because that's a core rule. You go to an event and the core rules changed without your one-inch movement, it kind of changes how the game plays.
What you're talking about is there's a difference in game states, right? But, you know, when you use those two examples about allies versus withdraw, allies doesn't change the game, it changes your list.
Right.
Withdraw changes the game.
Exactly. And I thought the negative penalty to withdrawing and charging another target was good, you know, because it kind of represents, you know, if you were the abstract of real life, quote unquote, would be a hard maneuver to pull off if you were tactically retreating from an engagement to move into another engagement. You know, that would be a harder maneuver to pull off. So it's a negative one penalty. Very simple, very elegant. But making it optional, should I allow this? Should I not allow this? Why is it optional? If they fixed it? Just stuff like that. It's just not necessary.
Welcome back. We're being joined by Australian gaming aficionado, royalty, you know, always a tip to win various masters and always under-delivering, Mr. Paul Collins.
Thanks, mate. I think it's only you that ever tips me, but let's go with that.
So Paul's joining us today as part of this overarching episode of what he hopes he might see in the Clash of Kings 25 changes, and then we're going to give him a look at the book, and then we're going to see basically how his expectations were or were not met by the book, and maybe what he likes within the book. So Paul, we might roll into what you're hoping for before Clash of Kings, and do you have any really big expectations, or do you think we're going to get any big shakeups? Obviously, the whole thing of the command dice thing has kind of been spoiled, so you know that that's going to be a reasonable shakeup. But what else are you expecting?
I think Ronnie said that there wasn't going to be another Clash of Kings book until version 4. So I took from that that we weren't going to see any huge changes. As you say, like command dice have been spoiled. That is a big change in my opinion. Not a bad one. but time will tell. Like, we have to see what it does. I made a prediction about what I think it will do.
So what is that prediction for the command dice? What do you expect?
I expect it will be allowing units to do things that are already in the game, things that are not unbalanced. So what I wrote in my list was things like Strider or Bane Chant or simple abilities like that that are already tried and tested in the game.
Spells or special rules. They might be gifted them for a time.
Yeah, like if a unit gets Pathfinder or, you know, a unit gets Crushing Strength or TC or something, you know, so something that is already being worked out in the game and works, not, you know, this unit can redeploy or, I guess that's in the game too, but, you know, teleport or something crazy like that that's not currently in the game. I don't think they will do something like that.
And do you have an expectation with command dice that it will be reasonably easy to access and use command points, or like, do you have any expectations there, or whether you think they might actually be, you know, it might actually take quite a significant amount to be able to use certain things and activate them?
I would hope that it would be fairly limited. I think if, for example, you could give Pathfinder to every unit in your army every, like, a turn or two, that would be problematic. So I think it's going to be reasonably limited. Like, the abilities that you can use would be limited, and the amount of times you could use them that would be really limited. Otherwise, I think you're essentially creating, you know, a completely different points economy in the game. So instead of spending 100 points on a unit, for example, you might spend 100 points on command dice. And I think that would be subject to being exploited by some players.
Are there any bigger rules-based changes rather than, say, army-specific changes that you might be expecting or that you'd like to see?
I would have liked to have seen a different unlock mechanism. I know I'm not the only one that's said that before, but something to stop armies unlocking with elite troops. So when you see a dwarf army with five units of, let me get the right name, Iron Guard, or four hordes of Siegebreakers in an Ogre army, or four hordes of Forsaken Knights, or five hordes of Forsaken Knights, that feels wrong. That feels like, you know, the normal troop types aren't in the game.
Yeah, so you're almost thinking like along the lines of that, you know, armies could be at some point, not necessarily now, but like they almost should be, how common should this unit really be?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I know it's a fantasy game, right, but how many Siegebreakers are there in, like, Ogre armies?
Yeah.
And how many Warlocks exactly are there? Like, are Ogres some sort of magical race that just produce Siegebreakers and Warlocks? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. You know, have they? Every Ogre matriarch only births Siegebreakers.
Yeah, like firstborn is a Siegebreaker, secondborn is a Warlock. Every family, of course, any, you know, kingdom or empire would have elite troops, but that shouldn't be every time you see an Ogre army, you see two or three regiments of warriors and three hordes of Siegebreakers, and Nomogorok is in every army. It just seems wrong.
No, 100%.
To answer your question, I was hoping to see something like that, but realistically, you know, I know that that's a version 4 type thing.
Anything else more overarching?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a continuation of the ambush box rollout to meet the formations. So, i.e. getting rid of the old formations and replacing them with formations made up of the ambush boxes. You know, that's been the case for a while, that there's been an aim to move towards that, and I think we'll see that continue because there's been some more ambush boxes come out this last year since the last Clash of Kings book. So I think we're going to see some more of them. They're probably the overarching things that I thought of.
And what about army by army? I'm assuming, given your mention of ogres, you wouldn't mind seeing you know, somehow that Siegebreakers and Warlocks get a knock on the head.
I think there's been work ongoing trying to get other things into Ogre lists, like, you know, little boosts to Hunters and, you know, Warriors and stuff. But, yeah, all we see in most armies is Warriors, Sergeants, you know, warrior regiments, siegebreaker hordes, you know, occasionally a shooter, but it's sergeants and warlocks and taken multiple times.
Mm.
And I think, you know, we saw US Masters being won by ogres. I think siegebreakers need another nerf of some sort, because they're just too good. They're not cheap, but they're too good. And the unlocking with the warriors, like, it's just a nice combination. So I thought maybe we might see a some sort of nerf to siegebreakers points, or, you know, maybe I thought maybe they might copy the impaler movement scheme, which was, you know, speed 5 with wild charge, and, you know, an increase to warlocks. And I've got in my notes that Nom Nom could die in a fire.
not a big fan of Nom Nom?
Oh, he's awesome. I wish I could have him in.
Maybe it's a backfiring firebolt or whatever it is that Nom shoots, you know.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would love to Nom Nom to take up floristry or something and disappear from the army list, but I think it's unlikely.
Yeah. Arranging flowers instead of arranging dead bodies on the ground.
That's right. It's never too late for a career change.
Any other armies in your crosshairs?
Yeah, I think Twilight Kin might take a nerf or two. I've just painted a Twilight Kin army, full disclosure. I really hope they don't get mauled by the nerf bat too hard and they become, you know, sort of not unusable, but they don't become something that's good anymore, or like at least on par. I hope they don't get nerfed to the point where, you know, you're better off using something else. But I don't know what's going to happen. Like, there's obviously people are using lots of skiffs and people are using lots of crones, so I expect to see them in the crosshairs.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go, so I haven't made any predictions.
Other changes?
I think dwarves have continued to receive buffs, and I think they're already like at the top of the pile in terms of how good they are in tournament play. I think they should take some nerfs. The reality is I'd fully expect they won't have any nerfs because they just keep getting better. But if I was in charge, I would do an increase on mastiffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those things ignore stealthy, ignore cover, ignore movement penalties, you know, ignore individual. If that was a unit in the Twilight Kin, it would be nerfed into next week. But that's
only because Twilight Kin have every other rule, mate.
Like dwarves.
Yeah. Now, I don't disagree on dwarves, actually. And when you brought that up, because my argument for mastiffs had always been that when you lacked the speed, that you needed something to help control the speed of how the opponent's coming at you. But since they got ordered march, I hadn't thought of that, but I don't think that's unreasonable. I mean, I always disagreed that ordered march was an answer to a problem that they were having, because I think they were a solid army anyway. But yeah, I don't disagree that you could get away with a little bump on points on mastiffs these days.
And the impact is greater too. If you take, say, 8 units and give them mastiffs, which I don't think is like an unreasonable amount of dwarf regiments with mastiffs, and they do double the dice of weakness, like that's a huge amount of ignoring the rules every turn, or one turn, I should say, but it's still a huge amount of dice.
Mm.
I thought there would be an increase in Faber, or Faber's points. Faber Ironheart, is it?
Mm-hmm.
He is so prevalent. He's so good. He's hard to kill. And the last one I thought was Iron Guard could probably take a little bit of a points increase. They seem to be in everyone's list.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you not see Golic, Faber, Iron Guard in the list, and dogs?
Yeah, no, it's true. Although it's interesting because we've just had our episode with Dan Wright, who's a big fan of Ironclad over Iron Guard. And I'm the same, actually. That's how I've always played them, because Ironclad is so cheap for the points and unit strength 3. And given that, you know, the Iron Guard don't really hit much harder than the Ironclad, I've always gone, well, these guys' job is just to hang around and be resilient nerve. So, but you know, most of the world doesn't see it that way, I guess. They always go, for, like you say, always go for the Iron Guard.
I'm not an expert. I don't know that Iron Guard is like an auto-take, but people seem to like them. They are melee 3, and they've got a point of nerve on the Ironclad from memory.
Yeah, they do, 100%.
I just think that there's a combination of dwarves with the formation where it feels like everyone's melee three, everyone's defense five and six. It's a very tough list.
Well, I think the Iron Guard also got a bit of a stealth buff with the addition of things like extra Radiance of Life to the dwarves. So, you know, that Radiance of Life is just much more powerful now.
And Ordered March.
Yeah, and you combine it with an Iron Resolve Aura from Golok, and yeah, 100%.
And I think they still benefit if they happen to be nearby the banner. They still benefit from Elite, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, you might be thinking of the formation. The formation, yeah, the formations.
That's what I think. I think dwarves are too good. The next one is Order of the Green Lady. Mm-hmm. I thought Forsaken Knights could be irregular. I know they were in the past, so I think it's unlikely that would happen. I would give them a points increase. Mm-hmm. How many Order of the Green Lady armies do we see in there? Three hordes or four hordes of Forsaken Knights?
Mm.
Seems very good. I think there's other good lists in that army that other good units in that army that people could take, but I think that's not going to happen either. But I would have liked to have seen a points increase. The next one was Northern Alliance. I don't think this is going to come as a surprise to anyone, but I'm predicting Pack Hunters get a small increase. I've said they could also be irregular. I know a lot of shooting units are irregular, and there's plenty of other unlocks in that army, but there hasn't been a lot of movement to making things irregular, so I'm guessing a small points increase, 10 or 15 points. I had predicted that orcs would disappear. They seem to be moving over to reforged colours. I hope not, but I think the time of the orc is coming to a close.
Uruk.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, I don't know. That's just a gut feel. I don't know. The next one is Trident Realms. I was hoping we would see a bit of a points reduction for River Guard. There hasn't, well, at least in our area, there hasn't been a huge uptake in the new Twilight Kin, like a frog-heavy army. I know someone in Queensland has just done one and taken it to a tournament, but
yep.
I think they're really nice models. I'm not sure if they're a little bit overpointed. So I was hoping for a small reduction. And the last one was sort of tying into the Order of the Green Lady. I was hoping to see a little bit of a points reduction for Thunderous Charge Cavalry and Knights. I know we had one once before, but I think we might see a little bit more, you know, of basic Knights and basic Cavalry rather than, you know, Forsaken and Redemption Knights, etc., if they were a few points cheaper.
Why don't we give you a look at a book and we'll be back what your thoughts are.
Sounds good.
And welcome back. Paul's had plenty of time.
I've read every word.
Digest the changes that he's seen. So we're going to kind of take a little bit of a look at his predictions and what he likes. In particular out of the new book, obviously without spoiling the whole thing, but, you know, we've got a couple of people doing this, so there'll be a few things pop up. If we go first, Paul, to some of the overarching changes, I mean, I think what we can put out there straight up is that list building is not changing, right? So not that you, I mean, that was a hope and you didn't think that that was really going to be a big thing, but what were your thoughts around having seen Command Dice now?
I'd like to have a game or two, but I think my gut feel is it's good. It doesn't look like it's going to have a huge impact on the game. I think it'll be a fun side tactics for the game. Another thing to think about, rather than buying an item, you might use some command dice. There are different commands for every list. Some of them seem the same or similar. I haven't had a chance to look at them all, but they seem to be thematic for each army. And then there are some generic ones that everyone can use. Like, unless you're investing a lot of points, I don't think it's going to have a big impact on the game.
No, I mean, my read of them is I think still the better generals will be the people that benefit most.
Yeah.
That most of them can still be used reasonably tactically. I think, as with most of these things, some armies got a little bit richer. Like, I feel like dwarves got a little bit richer. Their command dice are pretty good. I mean, which for me is kind of unfortunate. I mean, it's one of the reasons my dwarves don't leave the box anymore is because I don't particularly want to be playing an army that's too good, you know, or at least perceptually perceived as too good. Yeah, I kind of, my read's the same as yours, is that I think it's going to just bring that extra dimension. And I think there will be more surprises for people because there is a reasonable list of standard ones and then the each command one. So I think we will see more variability, but it will still benefit the best generals more.
I agree with what you said as well. I think the best generals will make the best use out of it. I don't feel like there's going to be any gotchas. You know, like when you exchange lists before a game, you can always say, oh, what are your two, you know, special command orders or whatever. I don't think that's going to be a big deal. So it's optional, right? So if, you know, you don't want to play it, you don't have to play it.
Yeah, and I think for me, what I'll probably do until I'm really used to it is just have a little printed list of like all the standard ones so that I can have at least during my opponent's turn be thinking about what might be coming at me, because I don't think it'll feel overly natural at first. But, you know, nothing does, and the more you play it, the better you get at it, I guess.
Good if it was on the printout from the army list builder. So if it said what your two special things are, and then there's only like whatever it is, eight or something, generic ones. I don't think it's a big deal to print them at the bottom.
I agree. Well, and could even make it optional, right? On the print preferences, they could just have a check. Do you want a standard list of command dice printed, command orders printed? Yeah, for sure. Cool. And then one of your other bigger, other than army specific ones, one of your other things was looking at the formations around. Would we see some formations removed in favor of aligning with army boxes? And do you think that happened?
It did, Matthew.
Oh, look at you, Nostradamus.
I've got to get one right. So the goblin one got removed, the bang sticks formation, and I was initially very sad at that. But I noticed that the standard flea bag can now have an upgrade to take a bang stick upgrade. And it's not limited, so you could have, you know, two or three units with bang sticks if you wanted.
Or an all-mounted bang stick army.
For example, you could. I've always wanted to do an all-mounted goblin army, so... it's definitely a possibility. But there is a new formation, for example, with the goblins, which is two regiments of sharp sticks and a mincer mob troop, which is the contents of the ambush box, right? And they get ensnare.
It's certainly not a step down in formation power, I don't think.
No, that sounds pretty good to me, especially the mincer mob.
Yeah, you must hate it. You must hate it as a goblin player.
I'm going to have to paint more goblins. I can't believe I just said that, to have some with sharp sticks, but it's a small price to pay. I'll happily pick up another ambush box. They're pretty good.
Well, that's the good thing about it, right, isn't it, that you can just do that and it'll cost you, what, $50-$60
Yeah.
You know, just to add the formation if you want it. Yeah.
I think that's pretty good. I know I heard someone talking about the halfling formation and, you know, picking up a box to paint it up. Very cool.
We might spoil that one, but any others we might leave. But it seems like that trend continues. So that if we see refreshes in the future, that we might expect that if your formation doesn't align with the ambush box, that perhaps that could change.
Just the last comment is, I like that they've kept the flavour of the old formation with the goblin one. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And what about, were there any gameplay changes that you didn't predict that you liked the look of?
I really like the look of the triple dice for the, what do you call it, when you have a special rule to get double dice against an individual?
Duelist?
Duelist, yeah.
I like that too.
I know that's been spoiled as well, but I think that's really cool. Got to keep those crones in line somehow. And I think that's a good rule. It makes sense.
Yeah, I saw a post on Fanatics about when I think that was leaked a little bit, and that someone said, oh, it shouldn't count if you're coming up with something else with Duelist, but... I don't mind that. Do you know what I mean? Because then it comes down to the movement positioning, which is what Kings is all about anyway. So I don't mind if they don't cancel each other out.
When I saw that post, I thought, yeah, that makes sense. If you're a duelist too, you're probably not going to get smoked straight away. But like you say, like the whole point of the game is maneuver and getting to the right spot before your opponent. So if the seductress that flies 20 and now has triple attacks can get herself into a position where she can, you know, have a pick of individuals, then that's probably right that she takes one out of turn.
Yeah, I also think it kind of gives some value back to, because a lot of mounts are expensive, So if you have a duelist character that can take a mount, you know, you get some value back there too. So yeah, I'm hoping it'll change up a bit of the type of individual characters we see on the table. So that could be interesting. Like, for example, I might consider, I think an Iceblade or something in the Northern Alliance has duelist. So
I think it does. Yeah, that's a nice model too.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Anything else from an overarching point of view?
I haven't really had enough time to look at it, so
I think there's always subtle things in there that you don't quite pick up, right? Because it's not like it doesn't always go, say, you know, this is a specific change from last year. So
I'll just make one little comment about that. There's, when you see the book, there's an awful lot of text in there. At first glance, it's really hard to pick up what's changed because they've got to do all of the upgrades that have occurred since the last time the book was out, which is, what, probably 3 years now? So I think it'll take people a little bit of time to get through that and work out what's different.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, well, I know Jeremy's been working away for his Growing Gems episode of compiling all the changes, having to compare documents, and it's taking a while. So
I like those episodes, so I'll be looking forward to listening.
All right, so let's move on to what your specific army predictions or hopes were. Now, one of those was a bit of a shake-up to ogres. And did you get your heart's desire there, Paul?
Well, Nom is not a florist. He's still in the list. Now, I was wrong there. Siegebreakers did take a bit of a nerf. Well, they've got a bit of a buff and a bit of a nerf, but they've gone down to speed 5, but they've got a points decrease, which I thought was very interesting.
I'm sure there was a time where they actually were speed 5, but then they got buffed up.
It might be. Could that have been in version 2? I don't remember them.
It may have been.
I don't remember them being speed 5, but anyway, they have, in my opinion, taken a nerf. Interestingly enough, they've done two good things. I didn't say it, but I had been hoping to see some increased synergy to incentivize people to take warriors. The RC's done a good job because they've put a nerf in for the warlocks and incentivized people to take some of the lesser taken units. So is it called Tribal Magic? Ogre Warlock, whatever that rule is called that lets them get extra dice. It now only works on Merc units, which are Hunters, Berserker Braves, Warriors. So you can still get the extra dice, but you can't use Siege Breakers to do it, which I think is good.
Within that too, there's a character and the command, one of the command dice options for them to also give you, incentivize you to take non-Siegebreaker units.
There's a couple of little twists and turns there, I think.
Yeah, basically still revolving around that Merc keyword. So I think when you combine that, that is a reasonable... What I like about it is it's not so much a strength debuff, because I think when you get a points decrease, you're not really losing a lot with that speed decrease. But I like that what it does is buff other options from a list building point of view and how they might synergize.
I really like it.
Yeah, which I think is where some of the better lists now, like your Twilight Kings or Northern Alliance or things like that, are better encouraged, right? Is they're encouraging you to synergize your list. So I think that gives a better feel to the list overall.
And I think one of the problems with the ogres up until now has been that everything synergized. So
yeah,
nearly impossible not to get those synergies on the table because you just have to have a unit or three units there and it automatically works. So
yeah, for sure. Twilight Kin.
Mm.
Shall we at least semi-address your feelings on Twilight Kin?
Well, I think they've copped a little bit of extra attention from some of the other lists. It's fair to say that they've got a few a few nerfs. I'd go so far as to say there's a suite of nerfs in the Twilight Kin changes. Mostly things are going up in points. The Navigator doesn't work for Vicious on Impalers and Mutants anymore. The cost of Blood Hex has gone up. And it's now proportionate to the size of the unit, but it's gone up. The Crones have taken a nerf as predicted. The Skiffs have taken a nerf. I think time will tell what all the impacts will be. There are a couple of buffs in there, which I was happy to see. So I think the unit's called Void Wranglers, the ones that have the Tormentors, or, yeah, Tormentors, I think, with the with the Fleet Wardens. They've got a 9-inch range now. I'm pretty sure it used to be 6 for that unusual shooting attack, which I think is really good. I'm tempted to try them out. But I think like most people, I need a bit more time to work out what the nerfs mean to Twilight Kin, because that there's a lot of them.
My read of it is I think there is a chance there's been a, you know, maybe a tiny step too far. But I think what is hard to appreciate is with some things like gaining a keyword or something as well and another unit becoming no longer irregular, is that how much it might just change up the list building away from stuff that was fairly standardized, and maybe we'll just see new synergies arise potentially. But it is a little bit hard to tell.
There were so many good build options for Twilight Kin before that I hope it doesn't just force people down into one or two specific builds. That's my fear.
Yeah, whereas I feel like it could do the opposite.
You think it'll create more build options?
Particularly away from things like your crones, you know, which, you know, aren't the entirety of a build. You know, perhaps we see people, you know, take some other things, and we'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
I think they'll still be very competitive. I think they've still got a significant amount of answers to a lot of problems. It's hard to appreciate when there are so many changes, like little bits of buffs and plenty of nerfs, it is hard to appreciate what the full impact will be for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's some that don't make a lot of sense. Like they've taken, the Navigator had Icy Breath 5. That's been removed. That doesn't sound like, unless it's a thematic change, it doesn't sound like something that needed to be nerfed. But, you know, there are some buffs that I wouldn't have predicted either. So maybe it's for a thematic reason. I don't know. As you say, like time will tell. People will play it and it'll evolve. I have faith that it's going to be reasonably balanced. The RC, and I'm sure the playtesters have tried out different options. So I look forward to running with the changes and seeing how they go.
So unfortunately for you and for lots of people, we didn't see any knockdown to the dwarves really. In fact, they probably got a little bit stronger with command changes in general. Your Order of the Green Lady wishes, I don't think, came true.
No.
But your Northern Alliance wishes in terms of Pack Hunters getting a little bit more pricey did.
They're not irregular, but they've gone up in price.
Yeah, and actually I forgot to say that before. I think there has been a decided effort that we're not necessary to walk away from just making things irregular, that their preference is to try and influence list building otherwise. That's not certainly, as I understand, an official standpoint, but I think over time making things irregular and then not irregular has probably had more blowback than other things. Orcs weren't removed?
No. Spoilers, I don't think anything's been removed.
No, I don't think anything's been removed yet.
Even your favourite army, the Skidmark Slaves, are still there?
Exactly, the Skiddies are still there. What about, did your River Guard get a knockdown in points?
It took me ages to go through this. I went through all the profiles. They didn't, is the short answer. They did cop a nerf, though. I thought they might have got a buff. They got a nerf. They've lost the ambush rule, which means you could use them as unlocking units in ambush. For some reason, that rule's been removed. Unless it's listed somewhere else, I don't know. It seems like an unusual one to take away. There is a different synergy being introduced. So the Dam Busters, the Fighty Dam Buster unit, I can't remember what it's called, but the one with 18 attacks on a 4. It used to be Thunder 2, Crush 1. It's now been changed to Crush 2, Thunder 1. So that's a little buff. But the biggest change that I noticed were the Dam Busters, one of the heroes now gives them a Rally 2 for Dam Buster units, which I think is quite good. I think that's new. Yeah, so that's a change for them. I think they needed a bit of a buff. Not sure if that's enough, but it's definitely a step in the right direction, in my opinion. I'd love to see some more of those frogs on the table.
So would I. Before we wrap up, anything else stand out to you?
Yes, one thing that does stand out is it doesn't look like a big change pack. Unless I've missed a bunch of changes, there's not a lot of nerfs or buffs to units. Some of the things that everyone thought was coming, like, you know, ogres and Twilight Kin, but there's little buffs here and there's little nerfs there, but I don't think it's a big impact pack, aside from the dice.
I think, like you said, there's a lot of text, but a lot of those are prior changes, reprinted.
Yeah.
I mean, my read of it, with not having knowledge of this, but I wonder, having read of it and going, oh, you know, then the nerfs overall, other than Dwalakin, are reasonably mild, is that they probably want to get a really good read on what are the changes created by command dice, because I think that has real potential to change up. Given that you can buy different versions of command for command points, I think they're probably looking at, does it change list building? You know, does it change results on its own if some armies did get, you know, better ones or less? So I'd imagine that was a pretty big part of the ethos.
Yeah, I suspect the RC and the playtesters spent a lot of time on command dice. And as you say, we'll see what that does. But exciting stuff, in my opinion.
Yeah, all right. Well, appreciate your time, Paul. Thanks for joining me for looking at your first impressions, Rose, of Clash of Kings.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you guys have enjoyed the couple of little interviews around this that we've stitched together. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.